Hi, I'm Evany, deregistered midwife turned birthkeeper. Welcome to my podcast. Whether you are a birthkeeper, midwife, or aspiring to be one, or planning to take ownership of your own birthing experience, this is for you. Join me as I explore ways to reclaim pregnancy and birthing wisdom and skills for the future of our world. I'll be talking to you and my guests as we discover how magical birth happens outside of tick boxes and weave the science and sacred diving into authentic and traditional midwifery. So, just as my mantra says, let's keep birth truths alive. Brilliant. Hello and welcome to another episode of the podcast. And today I'm talking with Leonie from Birthwise with Leonie from Instagram. Welcome.
Thank you. Thank you so much for having me on to chat on your amazing podcast.
I'm really looking forward to this conversation. We've already had a little chat together, but really this is the first proper time we've had a proper discussion, which is It's really good. I've been following you for a while. I love what you're doing out there. And I think it's really important. And I want to raise people's awareness because I think, you know, there might be people who are like midwives, student midwives who may listen to the podcast, plus doulas, birth keepers who are coming into contact more now with free birth and people making those choices. So it'll be nice just to sort of explore it and your own personal journey and maybe a bit about what people should know, you know, if they're making that choice themselves. So tell me, who are you and what do you do?
Who am I and what do I do? Hi, I'm Leonie. My main job is I'm a mum to three beautiful wild boys. We live in Coventry in the West Midlands, and I'm still sitting with what to call myself, if I'm honest, but I am drawn to free birth in lots of different capacities. So I guess I lean towards birthkeeper. I don't feel like I've fully earned that title yet, but maybe that's a whole different discussion. So I support other families who are also choosing free birth, or just like partially disengaging with the system. So my own births, and I'm sure we'll go into them, but I've free birthed all of my children with just my husband present. So I feel like I'm in a bit of a strange position in that I've never witnessed birth with a midwife present. And that feels really cool. I feel like it's quite perhaps a clean perspective. I feel like I'm doing this with my hands. I feel like I'm kind of on the periphery of a lot of what goes on, and I'm not there right in the middle of things fighting fires. I'm just standing by the side going, well, if you want to come away from everything, I can help you with that. I can hold your hand, I can show you, you know, I can talk about what I did. I also just need to mention that I do this virtually at the minute through screens. I'm not there in the birth space, although I really, really would love to be. That's really where I'm headed when the time's right, you know, life's busy with three little ones. That's
awesome. That's really good. And so it's from your own experience, and I think that's interesting how you describe it. I like that you know, you're not in the middle of this thing that is the maternity system fighting fires, because that's really what we're doing, you know. Whenever I've talked about birth, and I think people have got to know me now, that even though I was working in the system for a long time, and then I danced in and out sometimes, but actually it's not going to get better. I think there's people trying really hard to make changes to, you know, make birth feel better. So my thing is all about the labor birth, and even though it's obviously part of the whole spectrum of, you know, pregnancy and having a baby, but the system is set up for how it is, you know. And you either, I think that's where I think people are getting a bit more sort of clearer now, that if you're going in the system, this is what to expect, you know. You know that you're going to expect to meet, I mean, how I describe it, that we've got like this generation now of midwives that haven't seen physiological birth, and there's you who's gone, I'm just going to have a baby. And your podcast, because you've got a podcast, haven't you? And it's called Normal Boring Free birth. Oh, normal boring birth. What's it called?
It's called Normal Boring Free Birth for Normal Boring People. And it's tongue in cheek. Of course, it's not normal or boring, but it kind of is as well.
Yeah. Because birth, yeah. There you go. Somebody has a baby. And I, you know, I always say that with the caveat that, yeah, I'm not stupid. I've been around birth for a long time. And it doesn't always go straightforward. Not at all. But the majority of times it does. You know, whether there's a midwife in the room or not. And actually, the midwife in the room, that observer who changes things, and when we hand our power over to somebody else, that completely changes what is happening in our body. So tell me, how did you get to this point of deciding to have a free birth with your first baby?
So I was mulling this over actually before we had the recording, and I used to start just before my first pregnancy when I was really ill with fibromyalgia, but I was thinking about it actually in the shower, and I thought, no, I'd like to start today by my own birth, and how I just want to give it a bit of context really, because I think it's quite unusual for somebody, particularly with their first baby, to choose to completely disengage. And certainly for those around me who had known me my whole life, they were like, what are you doing? It's a combination of all of one's life's events so far, rather than it just being a complete like thing out of the blue. And so I wasn't aware at the time. It's only very recently that I've been able to join the dots between my own birth, and actually I had a pregnancy before my eldest was born. So these are kind of landmarks, if you like, that I feel are really important to touch on. So my own birth was very traumatic. My mum nearly died. She had preeclampsia and was told, we have to get this baby out of you right now. It's really, really serious. And so I was 35 weeks gestational age, and she had an emergency, very, very stressful cesarean section, and she was under general anaesthetic. And then there was this massive period of separation. I think she was on kind of sedative medication. And yeah, that imprint has really, as birth does, has stuck with me for my whole life. And it's really this journey that I've been on since having my eldest that I've been able to really pick that apart and feel the impact of that. So this was my birth. I was born, my mum was unconscious because she was under general anaesthetic, and it was traumatic. And the feeling that stayed with me was, I don't feel ready. I wasn't ready to be born. And that really, I had no idea, but that really transferred into my first experience of giving birth, which was, I was with a previous partner, and I wasn't ready for children. He wasn't ready for children. I mean, it was really difficult. I always knew that I was going to be a mother, but it wasn't the right time. So I had an abortion, and it was really, you know, on paper it was the right thing, and I'm glad that it happened because when it needed to, but I was under general anaesthetic. It was traumatic, and I came away with this really strong sense of I wasn't ready. Like, wow. I wasn't ready. I didn't have a chance to say goodbye.
Yeah.
And that was really hard, and I didn't join the dots later. That was my first experience of birth, because every pregnancy ends in birth, right?
Yeah.
And I didn't know that. And actually, it was when I first started telling when I first said my free birth journey out loud to somebody who wasn't my close family, I realized I'd forgotten that I'd been pregnant before. You know, I'd really buried that. It was so interesting. But so that was a couple of years before my eldest was born. So I'd really had this kind of unconscious, I had no idea that these things were even related. And throughout all of that time in between me being born and me being pregnant for the first time, I had a series of very difficult things happen in my life, but I didn't have the tools or the skills to be able to deal with that or express that. Or so I buried, I pushed stuff down. and how that eventually manifested, because it's got to go somewhere, was that I became really ill with fibromyalgia. So this is in the lead up to my eldest being born and me being pregnant with him. So I got to the stage where I was in such chronic pain that I couldn't walk, I couldn't work, I was literally bedbound for periods of time. I was on increasingly strong pain medication. I was so disconnected from my body that, well, I was told I was going to be on these painkillers for the rest of my life. And I just really had identified with that kind of version of myself that I was always going to be a little bit ill, or a lot bit ill at the time.
Yeah. Yeah.
I was in a relationship that wasn't really going anywhere. I was bringing a lot of toxicity into my body, into my mind. I wasn't in a good place, basically. And there was, for me, this kind of reached this crescendo of, I'm breaking, like, I can't do this anymore. And at that point was when my now husband and I began our relationship. And for me, that is a real marker in time. There was the me beforehand and then the me afterwards. And pretty much, I mean, I became pregnant really quite quickly. And I was still in this mindset of, you know, are you sure you want to be with me? Because I'm this ill person, you're going to have to look after me forever. Like, this was who I thought I was. And I couldn't imagine, like, my body had failed me so drastically. You know, I couldn't walk to the bathroom. And that was really difficult to acknowledge that, with hindsight, that was me doing that to myself. I didn't have the tools or the skills, but that was from stuff that I was doing to myself. And I really had to have this dramatic identity shift of, that was me, that can change, and I can do something about that. So these really pivotal, foundational mindset shifts just completely transformed my life. And so I really began this journey of, who am I? What do I do? And what am I doing to myself? So in the early days of pregnancy, I think as soon as I found out that I was pregnant, almost, I stopped my pain medication overnight. I just thought, well, it's not compatible with pregnancy, I'm just going to ditch it. And I wasn't working at that time, and I just slept for about 5 weeks straight. I just had to completely crash.
Yeah.
And I was caught, I was held by my husband, and he was really instrumental in helping me with these tools to reevaluate, like, what are you doing to your body? And I had to just start listening to what my body was telling me. Where was this pain coming from? Because I hadn't been able to, you know, answer that question myself.
Was there anything, was it just within you and that you knew, or was it triggered by anything else as well? Well, not triggered, but you know, were you reading anything, or was there anybody that you were listening to that was sort of, you know, supporting you on this journey, or sort of opening your eyes to this? Or was it just something innate that was coming out?
It was a relationship between me and my husband, and what we both brought to each other that was really, I was able to see by the particular questions that he had asked and the particular way that he saw me. He saw through it. He saw through my mind that was trying to tell me that I was broken. And he's like, no, you're not.
That's what do you mean?
And that was revolutionary to me. And so it really started off with just the two of us. Well, I guess the three of us, because I was pregnant, and, you know, and that grew as I was in such a tender space. I wasn't really ready to show myself to anybody else. But so I started off tackling this diagnosis, which I had sought out. I knew that I wasn't in a good place, but I needed a label to put onto it, to be heard, to have my pain heard. So I sought out the medication, because, you know, that's all I knew. I didn't know how to approach it differently. And so I needed the doctor to tell me what was going on for me, because nobody else was noticing that I was in such a bad way. And so this outsourcing that we've already touched on, I think, to medical professionals to tell me what's going on for me, was something that I knew wasn't okay. And I'd have previous experiences as well where I'd go to the doctor and say, hey, I think I can feel this, and they say, no, you can't, it's not that. So, you know, like in my
what do you know years, what do you know about your body?
Yeah, you're only you. So yeah, that was already a source of frustration, and at that point I just knew that I couldn't kind of carry on, so I was tackling this diagnosis. And I started off going to all of the midwife appointments. You know, I notified at the GP and everything, and it was really, again, really early on. I think I was about 13 weeks pregnant or so, and I could feel my baby moving. Like, I was sure I could feel my baby moving, and I know that that's quite like early, but I could feel this baby inside me, and I was so excited. I went to the appointment and told my midwife, and she said, oh, don't be silly, like, that's too early.
Oh.
And I thought, okay, that's interesting. You don't believe me. You don't believe what I'm saying to you. And also, I think I built up enough confidence by that point slowly to say, but I can, like, I definitely can, and I trust myself. And that really was the first seed for me of, I don't think I want to talk to you again. I don't, like, what if I see you next time? Because, as you know, it's so common, it's different midwives, different midwives and stuff. So, excuse me. So I went to this appointment, and she told me that I couldn't feel what I said I could feel. And it was really crushing, because I'd been on this journey of, you know, well, what can my body do then? I need to be able to trust, I need to feel safe in my body, I need to be able to trust my body. And from that point, I realized I was struggling with things like constipation, I was having kind of irritable bladders. And I remember I taught myself how to pee again, like how to actually feel what was happening in my bladder, to be able to release that urine fully and just to relax and let my body do its thing. So I just got this image, I was on all fours, I got into a place that was comfortable, I felt really safe to just do what, let my body do what it needed to do, because I've been fighting my body for so long. I've been pushing it with caffeine, with, you know, pushing. And so I had to start going, well, I'm making myself ill, I have to relax, I have to just sort my mindset out. And so I did. I learned what it was like to completely soften and just let things come out of my body.
Amazing.
It was amazing. It was. It felt so good. I just felt, you know, I remember just apologizing to my body and just feeling so sad at the way that I've been treating her, that just the relief of, well, my body's not broken. Like, I was doing that to myself. I was doing the holding because I didn't feel safe. And that's clever in a way, but so I had this series of kind of learning my body again. And then there was another really pivotal thing that happened. I watched a documentary on like alternative birthing methods, or, you know, kind of practices, and there was placenta encapsulation, and I'd never heard of any of this stuff that was talked about. I had watched birth,
mind blown.
My mind was blown. I'd thought, well, birth is at hospital. I'd always been drawn to birth, actually, since a really young age. I remember being fascinated by a book.
Me too. Yeah, loved it.
And I just, yeah, I just couldn't get enough of it. I knew I was going to be a mum. I watched, forgive me, One Born a Minute, but I was just so drawn. That was just what was available.
Yeah, everything.
And I thought, well, great, you know, that's almost romanticising the hospital birth, because it brought up those feelings of, I love birth. So I hadn't even thought about that it could be different until I saw this documentary, and there was a woman who free birthed on a barge.
That is somebody. So she was the first person, I can't remember what her name is.
Joanne, I think.
Yes, that's right.
Yeah.
So years ago, so that was my first introduction to probably free birth, was years ago when I met her. Before she had, I think I met her when she was pregnant and what she was planning to do. And then she had the baby and she wrote a blog post, actually, for one of my old websites years ago. I know. And then she was like, and it was on the telly, and it was amazing. Yeah.
Oh my goodness, that's such a cool link.
Oh, and that's amazing as well, that I think you're not the first person that said that, you know, that, you know, that doc, I can't even remember, was it on BBC or Channel 4?
I literally can't remember, no.
But other people have said about her, and it's inspired them and made them sort of, it's sort of like open their eyes that, oh, that's possible, you know?
Yes.
And I think it was under the moon, there was the moonlight, and oh yeah, it was just awesome. And that was some years ago as well, when free birth was really, like, that was an unusual, really unusual to do that.
Yeah, it is, that, isn't it? And I remember being struck by that feeling of, oh, that's like, you can do, are you allowed to do that? Like, you can, that's the possibility. And as soon as it was planted, and I mentioned to my husband, like, I've just seen this documentary and this cool thing happened. And he's like, right, great, let's do it.
Amazing.
He was so there from the very beginning. It was just so clear to him, like, well, why else would you do it any other way? Like, what, like, why would you go? You're not sick. You don't go to hospital until you're sick. You're not sick, you're just pregnant. So why wouldn't you just do that? And for me, you know, of course, it was like a massive different journey getting to that place, as I've touched on already. But for him, he was just so clear that, and it wasn't forceful, it was just really, he was just there with us. And I still wasn't quite there. I was contemplating home birth by that point, because that was such a big leap to then free birth. And at the time we were living with his parents, and they were not so keen on home birth. They had a lot of their own stuff around birth, which we've since talked about, is really interesting. But we were thinking, well, what are we going to do then? They don't want us to birth in their home. Do we rent an Airbnb? That didn't feel quite right. But they were really open to us. We bought a bell tent and put it in. They've got a really big garden that, like, backs onto some woods. So they were really happy with us making that our space in the garden, and we were preparing to give birth in there. And that was really cool. There was something so important about being able to shut that zip, close those doors, and it just being totally, you know, the roundness, the holding of that, the thin canvas. We could hear the foxes at night. We could hear, you know, the rain, feel the wind. It was so, so amazing. We lived in it for about a month. We kind of had hookup to the house, so we weren't just, you know, it was November. Awesome. As well, that he was born, by the way. It was cold, but we had heating in there.
Whoa. Did you say November?
November, yeah.
Oh.
Yeah, it was lush. It was so beautiful. But so, you know, we made it our nest, and just got everything that we needed, that I needed to feel safe. And that was a really big thing, because the more I was learning about birth, because I just thought, wow, this is fascinating. And I've since learned that when I'm into something, I'm, you know, got this hyper focus, had no idea at the time, but makes perfect sense now. I was like living, eating, breathing, sleeping it. And so I was learning what birth needed to support physiology was for me to feel safe primarily. So I was thinking, okay, great, so what do I need to feel safe? And it was to have my own space, to be, I'm quite a private person. I don't really like being observed at the best of times. Like, I hate birthdays. And I knew that I just needed me and him. And we hadn't heard of doulas or anything at the time. But I was still a little bit on the fence. I think saying it out loud, saying it to friends and family, leave alone professionals, can be really scary. And so I was still engaging, but I think I'd started to decline things like blood tests and, you know, giving my urine and stuff. So I was kind of in that mindset of like opting out slowly.
Yeah.
But I'm, you know, I've always been a really good girl. I've always been like a people pleaser, and it's hard. It's really hard.
I know that feeling.
Yeah. Just having him next to me, just knowing that I was safe in his holding, was enough to help me make the change. But there was another pivotal appointment, actually. We had the home birth risk assessment, and it was with a senior midwife and another one. And I think at that point I was really clear that I was probably going to tell them that I wanted to free birth, but I just wanted to be sure. And this was one of the things that led me to writing my course, actually, because it was a real final nail, if you like. I was saying, well, what, you know, what can I expect basically if you come to the birth? Like, what are you gonna do? Because I had no idea what they were gonna do. And I remember them talking about listening into the baby, And the way that they put it was, we have to listen in to the baby every 15 minutes. And I was like, what if I don't want that? And she's like, no, we have to do it. And it was not presented as a choice. So I thought, well, if you're going to do that, I don't want you there. Like, if I don't feel like I can have a choice in the situation. And that was just really clear. It wasn't loaded. It wasn't, you know, I wasn't raging. It was just clear. Well, this is what you can bring if you come into the space. I don't want that. So that's fine. I don't want you there. I don't feel like I need you. But we were 10 minutes from a hospital. And I think that, you know, safety net was important for us as well, should anything happen. And that really helped my in-laws, I think, and my, you know, all of our family just think, okay, it's okay, there is help, medical help should they need it. And we just started knuckling down. So I think all of those different points, like moving away from feeling so broken to what do I need to feel safe, and that feeling of safety from the traumatic birth myself was really a thread for me my whole life. And I just knew that some people felt safe and most people didn't, and I can say no to having unsafe energy in my space. And it was amazing. It was absolutely amazing. And
wow, that's amazing. That's, I mean, just going back to that question, what do I need to feel safe? I mean, that's such an important question, and yet we probably don't ask it enough of ourselves, you know, going into birth, you know. And I think that's that whole journey that you've described, you know, you're exactly right, you know, that what we, how we birth and up until that point, it's everything of our life, our own birth and what we've heard and what, where we are as a person, as an individual, what we're taking into that birth, you know, in through that pregnancy. That's, you know, it's so important. Unfortunately, I think most people don't really think about it, you know. It's, and I still think, I think there's a lot of, you know, and we've got to a point now where it's educate yourself to fight the system, basically, I think, you know, rather than that internal stuff. What do I need? Where am I? How am I going to birth and feel safe, and, you know, to help my baby be born in a really safe and optimal way, you know, within, with myself, my body. So what was the birth like then?
It was amazing, of course, because birth is, but it was quite short, about 8 hours.
Wow.
I remember my mucus plug released when I was in the toilet in their house, and I thought, aha, this is cool, something's gonna happen. I just knew, I felt different. It'd kind of been slowly building for a couple of weeks, just gentle niggles, but because there was woodlands behind where we were, which just, I just walked for about 2 weeks solid, just, I couldn't keep still, you know, so I knew that things were kind of coming. And yeah, then we went back to the tent and I told my husband about the mucus plug, and I was like, oh, it's really exciting, it's gonna happen. And we just felt really, really loved up, and we went to make love, and I went to climb on top of him and my water's released.
Whoa.
I felt these two pops and my water's gushed all over him and the mattress, which is really funny, but I wasn't expecting. So now I realize that the way that I birth individually is that I go from 0 to 100, but I wasn't expecting that at all. So immediately, like, my water's released and I needed to vomit, wee, poo, all at the same time. It's just like,
yeah,
this explosion. And I just remember feeling really panicked by that. I was not expecting that, and so I needed to ground. Thank God there was just a thin canvas between me and the earth, so I was literally just on the floor, just like calm, and, you know, I managed to catch my breath. And that's another thing, you know, like this pattern of I didn't feel ready was really something that I had to sit with. And it's like, well, be ready, because it's happening, you know.
Yeah.
If I fight it, it's going to hurt. I kind of had that enough awareness, and so eventually I was able to relax and just be taken on this ride. And so my husband was there being amazing space holder. He would keep the candles going, and I didn't want any music, I didn't want him to touch me. I thought we'd planned out all this beautiful massage, but no, I totally just wanted nobody to come into my bubble. And I think he wasn't too sure. There was a point actually that happened. He wasn't too sure that I was okay. I knew that I was. I knew that I just needed to be left alone to figure it out. But he wasn't sure that, and like he was trying to encourage me to stand up. And I was like, no, like I need to be on the floor. I love you, but fuck off, you know? And so he did. And he just, you know, he found that trust again in me. Because he hadn't done much birth preparation. His preparation was, how can he trust me? He didn't want to see any images of birth until his own child was born. And I found that really interesting. I was a bit annoyed at the time. I was like, come on, let's watch this birth video together. But he's like, no, I don't want to see it. So that was really what I was doing. That was my preparation. Just eating, drinking, birth. And so he just wasn't really... It blew his mind, I think, even more than it blew mine. And I remember I was on the birth ball, like just really like moaning and groaning into it and roaring like I'd never roared before. I remember being really concerned that the neighbours would hear me and, you know, being a bit self-aware, but then just being like, oh, screw it. Like, I just have to, I can't not, you know, I can't not roar. And I remember then... the light came because he was born just in the morning and his head was coming in and out. And I remember I was just gently circling my hips. Like I didn't feel like I was pushing at all. I was just gently like spiraling him out. And then his head came. I was like, what the hell has just happened? And then his body flew out and my husband caught him and it was beautiful. It was really just like immensely powerful and amazing. And also I was just a bit like, oh, okay. You know, I thought that was something wrong at the time. I remember feeling like I was feeling quite pragmatic and matter of fact and not just like, you know, I didn't cry. I didn't, you know, break down and sob. I was just like, great, cool. Let's go sit down. I'll go cuddle my baby. I was, you know, I fell in love with him immediately, but like not in the way that I thought I would. And so I was a bit like, am I doing it right? Is this okay? And then I kind of cleared that away. And the next bit is a bit of a bone of contention for me. And maybe a whole other podcast in itself, because I'm a sucker for nuance. I really like the detail. But we called the birth center when my waters had released because I just wanted to keep them in the loop. And then about, I hadn't heard anything. And then about an hour or so after my son was born, my husband happened to pop into the house, I think, to get me some supplies and stuff. And he came back and he said, there's a midwife at the door.
Whoa.
Like, what? Like, what is she doing here? And we've since chatted with my in-laws and they definitely didn't call her. So she just came. She happened to come by, I think she said, to drop off some thermometers. I don't know, she made it some excuse. She wanted to come and check, you know. And because we had told them of our plans to free birth by that point, we told them about the bell tent, they'd come to have a look to do the risk assessment and stuff. And I think they're all talking about it, not necessarily, you know, in a mean way, just with a bit of curiosity as well, but it was clearly a bit unusual. They wanted to just, you know, see that we were okay. But I hadn't birthed the placenta by this point. And I, now with the knowledge that I have, felt like my adrenaline would have spiked when she came in.
Yeah.
And so I suddenly started to feel really tired, of course. I started to feel a bit unwell and was feeling a little bit dizzy. But, and so I said that to her and she was getting a bit worried, you know, we need to get this placenta out. It's been an hour. I had been feeling fine up until that point, just a bit tired. And she offered me the injection and I said, I knew that I didn't want that. And she said, well, how about I pull whilst you have a contraction and you push? And so I thought, okay, you know, that's harmless, fine. And it was fine, nothing, you know, I didn't hemorrhage or anything like that. And so on paper, this looks like a really minor detail, a great success, brilliant. But
yeah,
with hindsight, then I realized that I transferred this way of birthing the placenta onto my second born. And I had a lot to undo around the placenta birth with my third. And so that was a real interruption. At the time, though, I was grateful that she came because I thought that it was helpful, and I guess it was, but yeah. So it was a bit like niggly at the end. But yeah, it was what it was. It was beautiful. It was amazing. It was powerful. It was quite normal. And
did the placenta boring. Come out all by itself in the end anyway?
Well, she pulled and I pushed. Yeah.
Yeah. Without the injection though.
Without the injection though. Yeah.
Yeah. It's not ideal. We're not meant to, you know, midwives aren't meant to pull placentas out. But women can pull their own placentas out.
Yeah. I didn't have that urge myself. I was just quite happy to just rest, to be honest.
Yeah.
Catch my breath a bit. But yeah, it felt like, I don't know. I think I took on that energy of, well, there must be something wrong. Like, why? Well, yeah, it has been an hour, I guess.
Yes.
I need your help then. And, you know,
it's so, I think it's so fragile, that sort of, you know, our ability to go, I know what I'm doing, I'm in this place and I'm centered and so on. And then as soon as somebody else comes into that, the potential for it to change is like, you know, straight away, you know, like you said, your adrenaline. I even felt it just listening to your story, that there was, oh, there's this midwife at the door. And there you are sitting there with this beautiful baby, you burst in, you know, of this blissful surroundings, you know, in your own power. And suddenly I can guess that, you know, what do they want? I've been on the receiving end as a midwife thinking, well, what do they want? You know, when you know that energy that they can have, which is, I mean, curiosity is a really kind way to put it, whereas it's we need to make sure, we need to risk assess, is this safe, you know. So I can imagine, yeah, that would have affected your adrenaline. Your placenta went, that's just gonna stay here for a bit, you know.
Yeah, it's not safe.
Oh, but what an amazing, I'm picturing it all in my head. Have you got did you take photographs?
No, so I've only got a couple from my third birth actually, but I've got my family friend took the, don't know why it's stuck in my mouth. He took a picture from the outside of the tent.
The tent.
Yeah, glowing up, but not inside. No, there's no photos from the birth.
Oh no, I can just picture it. It sounds amazing. And what a journey, you know? And then definitely would love to do a podcast with you about placentas, because that is my thing. I love, you know, and I feel like it's so important. Midwives don't learn enough about it at all. There's no deepening into, you know, about, you know, that part of labour and birth, you know, that's so important. So after that birth, and was it all okay? You didn't have any issues with social services or any repercussions or anything?
No, not with my first. I did with my second, had a social services.
What happened? Yeah. So that's important, because this is we talked about this briefly before we started the podcast, you know, that, you know, this social services has always been out there in the background, being a threat to people, being used as a threat, absolutely, within the NHS, if people don't decide to do what they want you to do, you know. And I know people who've been threatened with social services if you don't, you know, if you're not going to have a lumbar puncture on your baby, for example, or you're not having vitamin K, or you're not going to take your baby in to be assessed because of the issues of breastfeeding, when it's like a margin of, you're slightly outside of the guidelines, but, you know, so it's that they'll call some people, health professionals will use social services, you know, we know, and with free birth. So what, and I thought it was getting better, but I know that you said that maybe it's not, and it might be getting worse. But what was your experience then? The second time where you'd have thought, well, she obviously does this. That's how she births the baby, you know?
Well, it came from an unexpected place. I thought I'd covered all bases. So I chose to have a completely unassisted pregnancy then with my second. So didn't book in at all. I did notify the head of midwifery that I existed, because we'd changed area at that point. In fact, all three of mine have been in different areas of the country, but So I chose to let her know that I existed, that I was planning to free birth, because I just didn't want the first time potentially somebody to hear about me to be when I turned up, maybe in labor or with a baby. I just felt like that wouldn't be sensible. So I sent her an email and it was amazing. She was really supportive, you know, great, congratulations. I have a duty just to remind you of the risks, but you know, I can see that you got it all in hand and we're here. If you ever want to opt in, just let us know. And so that felt really positive and it was just kind of a contained thing. It didn't spill over into anything else. And actually, I'm really glad that I sent that email because it was supportive in the end.
But yeah.
And then I had this amazing, very, very different birth with my second. And I knew about notifying the birth. So I'd researched all of that because I just thought, I didn't know that he had been noted, that my eldest had been notified. I didn't know that was a thing that happened. I didn't know that was a part of birth. And so when I just thought, well, can I just have my baby then? Do I need to do anything? And thank God I asked because I had no idea. And so I learned about the self-notification and all of that stuff. And that is another reason that I wrote my course, because you don't know, like, how many people know if they've had a baby that their baby's been notified. They're just, you know, you get a letter through, great, here's your NHS number, red book, blah, blah, blah. And they don't know all these processes that happen, like, within the institution. And I really feel strongly that we just, like, we deserve to know. We've got a right to know what is happening behind the scenes. And so I self-notified. I sent it off by post. With hindsight, I probably should have confirmed that it had arrived safely and everything. Didn't think to do that. And so I hadn't heard anything. I was feeling a bit tentative. I was grieving. My dad had recently died. I just wasn't, like, I didn't really want to engage with authority.
Yeah.
Generally, I just wanted to be alone with my baby, just to bond, just to feed and do, you know, whatever we needed to do. And so I went then to register. We didn't have a car at the time. And so I'd gone on a bus. It was summer. I was 2 weeks after giving birth. It was summer. It was really, really hot. It was just me because my husband was with our eldest. And it was like an hour long bus journey. I'm saying this because this is like, you know, it was a bit of a mission to get there, basically.
Yeah.
And I went into the appointment and the registrar said, oh, we can't find him on the system. So I explained, yeah, that's because I didn't have a midwife there and I've self-notified, I've done all the paperwork and stuff. And she's like, what do you mean you didn't have a midwife? I was like, yeah, it's fine, you know, it's fine. And I spoke a bit about it and she obviously found that difficult. We couldn't complete the registration because I think he hadn't been completely uploaded onto the system yet. But without me realizing, she didn't inform me, she should have done, but she referred me then to social services. So I went away feeling exhausted, like really wobbled, because it was a bit confrontational.
Yeah.
I felt like I'd done something wrong, like, oh my God. And then, you know, the bus journey, I was trying to breastfeed on the bus and oh, it was really stressful. That was my, you know, that was my choice to get the bus, but just the whole picture was really loaded with stress. So much so, actually, I was walking back from the bus stop and a midwife happened to drive past me and she said, hi, I'm a midwife, are you all right? You know, you look really pale. And I just, it was so beautiful that she reached out. But anyway, so then I get home and a couple of days later I receive a phone call and, hi, I'm a social worker, you've had this referral about you. And I was like, what the fuck? Like, what have I done? And in the end, thank God I'd sent that letter because I, you know, the email, sorry, to the head of midwifery who knew that I existed. And she she threw it out. She said, clearly, you'll find there's nothing else that we need to know. Thank goodness it wasn't a deeper investigation. She said, would you be open to maybe seeing a health visitor? And I just thought at that point, fine, you know, come round. So a couple came round for like a short appointment and that was that, really. And then we got the NHS number and then we had another appointment to register in with a senior registrar and it was all fine, everything went through. But I just never expected a registrar to be the sticking point. I thought I'd kind of done everything that I needed to do, apart from chase up the receipt of the notification. So yeah, that's one little thing that I put in to my course. It wasn't a major investigation. I think being honest, it's, you know, I'm a white, middle class, articulate, educated woman. I think that has got something to do with it. I know that there are other factors that unfortunately do play a part. I don't have a history of domestic violence. I don't have a history of mental health issues. And I know that these things can flag up and just form lots of red flags and a bigger picture for people. So yeah, I went through it easily, to be honest.
Yeah, I did wonder actually, because I think I've seen there's at least two people that I've seen on Instagram, you know, black women who've both been reported to social services and, you know, with, you know, real sort of digging investigations. And, you know, we did say briefly, I wondered, you know, what the rates of free birth are. And the thing is, and then, you know, is it an issue more? You know, obviously, I mean, race is an issue, you know, in the maternity service for anybody, you know, let alone somebody who's black and choosing free birth, or, you know, and I don't know what the rates are. And, you know, it's because we don't collate that sort of information, maybe we don't want to collate all that. Do you know what I mean? As in officially collate it. But it is worrying that, you know, what your circumstances are will determine how much digging somebody will do and how much investigation you could be subjected to. And the threat of, you know, I mean, that's always the worry, that, you know, the threat of having your children removed, you know.
And I think,
it's just incomprehensible, you know. And I think what you're doing with your course is really important, that people really are aware of, you know, especially if they're on their own and they don't have somebody who's like local to them, who's supporting them, and, you know, maybe who's also can be an advocate in some way, you know. I think we're reclaiming our right to birth freely, you know, in our power and our bodies, because actually we know that disturbing birth has serious side effects, you know, and repercussions on how that birth goes. And yet it's such a massive step, isn't it, for somebody to go, I'm going to do this, and especially if they're doing it completely from the beginning, and not, you know, being under anybody's, they're under the radar, basically, completely, you know. But it should be our right to be able to do that. And then you had another baby.
I had another baby,
afterwards. And how did that, what was that experience in general, you know, sort of as in, you know, did you have any more repercussions from it, or was it just, oh well, that's what Leonie does?
That's what it was like with my family and friends. Our family and friends, it's like, okay, we've got kind of the measure of you guys now, you free birth, okay. But then we were in a different area, so for me it sounds really strange, but it wasn't a definite that I was going to be free birthing every subsequent time. Like, I really had to dig deep and find that decision. It wasn't, I mean, looking back, I don't think I could have done it any other way, but it wasn't a given. And so with my youngest, you know, I had two children, we home educate as well, that's the other thing. So, you know, life is full, and I just thought, I know what's involved in doing this kind of level of preparation. I don't feel like I've got the space or the time or the energy or the inclination, really. I feel like I just needed to flop a bit and somebody hold me. But I kind of gathered myself, worked through all of that stuff. And I was becoming more and more interested in birth at that point, in, you know, in terms of like a career, like professional engagement, rather than just for my own interest. And so I just felt a bit curious. Because obviously I'd had my first pregnancy and birth, I had engaged mostly and then removed. And then my second, I'd completely disengaged. And so I thought, I wonder what it would be like, because I've never given birth with a midwife there. I wonder what it would be like. I'm just curious. And so I made the decision. And at this point, so me and my husband were really, like, it felt like we were doing it together. It was like a joint venture in the very beginning, and then it was slightly more my thing the next time. And by the time we had our third, it was very much like, you just do your thing, I'll be with the other kids, and you just like get on with it, do whatever you need to, you know, whatever you need to do. And so I felt like I wanted to go to some midwife appointments. I was just curious. I think as well, I was feeling a bit anxious. I really wanted to hear their heartbeat. And also because I was feeling a bit stressed, I really wanted to have my blood pressure just monitored a little bit.
Yeah.
And so I took my eldest with me. So I booked in, first of all, I was about 19 weeks, which I know is fairly late. And
the late booker.
Late booker, yeah. But then I said, look, I've had 2 free births. And she was like, right, okay. Great, got you. But she was lovely actually over the phone. She was, and then I did a booking appointment, and it was all fine. I've been received quite positively within the NHS for when I've had these sorts of conversations personally. And so I had the booking appointment, fine, went to a midwife appointment with my eldest, and I think I went to a few, maybe like 3 or 4, and as they were going through, I remember that feeling of going, feeling really blossoming, feeling really well, coming out feeling a bit like deflated, and just thinking, well, don't think I need this actually, just generally in terms of my energy and my space, but also I don't think I'm literally getting anything else from it now. Like I feel fine. I know my body feels vital. I know what I can do if they don't. If I've got any concerns, I know where to go.
And that's what I'm hearing
from the beginning. Yeah.
That's what I'm hearing all the time from pregnant women that I'm working with, you know, whether it's their first baby. It's a lot of first babies, you know, that going feeling like on their own, they feel like amazing, this is like this wonderful thing, and feeling so positive, and then the anticipation before the event, and then the midwife appointment, coming out feeling deflated and questioning and anxious. And you think, for me as a former midwife, what are we doing to people that in those appointments, you know, that it should be the most amazing connection and you know, encouragement for people that want to have midwife appointments. And it's really lovely to hear how that, you know, it's like for you, it's not a dogmatic thing that I am free birthing, I am resisting the system, you know, and that actually that there can be an ebb and flow, there can be a sort of, you know, utilizing this space. And actually, for those people that feel confident in their body to be able to dip in and out, why not? That's fantastic, you know, and that's how we care for ourselves, you know, safely, really.
Because for me, exactly that word safety, it wouldn't have been a safe thing for me just to go in blind and just to go in going, well, you tell me what I need then. You know, I knew that I was worried about this, this, and this. I could identify it. I could go and seek help for these particular things, and then once that's done, I can go away, like I don't need, you know, I'm done then. And so I began to opt out. I never had my you know, measurements taken or anything like that. I just didn't want to even go down that route of being plotted on a chart. Like I didn't want to receive the energy of being seen in numbers or being analyzed and that kind of, I know my baby's clearly growing, like I can tell, I can see, I can feel. And I'm not saying there's no place for people to question that or to go in and check themselves. I'm really clear that it's not about shaming anybody for any decision like that. I just think, what do you need? What do I need? And going in and meeting that need and then coming away, you know?
Yeah.
So I did. I started to opt out then. I think I was about 34 weeks. I'd had an appointment with the consultant midwife because I still wasn't. No, I think at that point I was kind of clear that I was going to free birth, but I was curious as to what conversations might come up. So I had an appointment with a consultant midwife who was going to be sort of liaising between the community team and my plans. And that was interesting. I wrote a birth plan and sent it to her so that she could tell her team, kind of soothe any anxieties. And she said, she was really great. She said, look, I've had another person locally who just said, what if you come and you know, sit in the car and don't come into the thing. And she said to her team, you have to be okay with that. Like that's the woman's wishes. You have to just accept it. And so I felt really comfortable after that appointment. But yeah, this whole social services thing, like I really wanted to avoid that again. So I thought, fine, we'll invite a midwife in from the NHS. We didn't have money to pay for an independent midwife. I was clear that I didn't want a doula or anybody. It was just going to be me and my husband again. And so I thought, well, we've been in contact with the midwives. Let's call them in to do the notification and stuff like that. Really, all we'd like is an NHS number, and then we can go and register and, you know, done, all the paperwork's done. So had this amazing birth and felt incredible the next morning, everything like all good, glowing, feeling great, no issues whatsoever. And then my husband a couple of hours later was trying to phone the community team just to let them know that we'd had the baby. Couldn't get through. It was a Sunday. The midwife who was my sign midwife had left. I didn't realise. We couldn't get hold of anybody. I tried all these numbers. I'm like, what the hell? So then we eventually got through to somebody on the labour ward, I think. And he had a chat with them on the phone, and they actually gave an NHS number for our son over the phone. And with looking back, I'm like, not sure she should have done that. But anyway, we thought that was, you know, settled and fine. Great, we've got the NHS number. They must have done all of their stuff.
Yeah.
I thought, well, if you've given it to us, it must be fine. But then a few hours later, I received quite a panicked phone call from a midwife, and she was saying, I have to come and see you right now. I have to. And I'm like, whoa, I've just woken up from a nap. Like, we don't actually feel ready. Can you come tomorrow? She's like, no, I have to come in. I have to see you right now. Just to check, you know, my boss is telling me all of this pressure. So I just caved, you know, I've just had a baby, of course. And I said, yeah, okay, fine. And then I told my husband, he was like, what? Really? Why is she coming? And he was just like, he was so not ready. I was not ready, but I feel like we couldn't really say no at that point. We weren't in the space to say no, is what I mean by that. And it's funny though, even because we were thinking to invite them in the first place, it's that difference, isn't it? When you call somebody and say, hey, do you want to come in? And then you get a phone call saying, we have to come right now, whether you like it or not. It's like, yeah. So she came round, and it was, you know, on paper, it was fine. It was a 10-minute appointment. She just asked minimal questions, you know, so how was the birth? And I told her, but she wasn't like, whoa, how was the birth? It was just like tick, 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 tick. And I just felt so deflated. And I remember her saying, because I declined the 9P test, the physical exam.
Yeah.
And she's like, what do you mean? Well, you know, the baby's got legal rights because they've been born, and I'm going to have to get somebody else to call tomorrow and blah, blah, blah. And I remember thinking, I think I messaged Kemi, like, Kemi, but it's optional, isn't it? I'm like, have I missed that? Is that true? And she said, no, it's optional. You don't have to have it. And I never got a phone call the next day, but it was so adrenalizing and so stressful.
Oh.
And I just thought it, you know, it was burst. It was gone then. That really, and I could feel a difference in my son's energy just because he'd interacted with somebody. He'd not met our family. You know, this is the other thing.
Yeah.
And it's no disrespect to midwives, but you're mostly they're strangers, and they've not met anybody else. They come in immediately after birth, or they're there for the whole birth. And I mean, I know that some are effectively like friends of the family then, and I love that those relationships can build. I think that's really beautiful. But for us, it felt really sad that he hadn't even met anybody else, and then the next person was a gloved midwife who was being a bit arsy. And because we were trying to avoid social services, we thought fine, and actually the notification went through, and you know, paperwork was done. But it did feel like I think I'd self-notify again. We just want to have a baby. I just want to grow a baby, a baby, bond with and feed my baby, just without people poking in. And I just really want to protect that space. Like, I know how to ask for help. I've got a voice. I can ask if we need it, and without somebody else bringing their crap. And I just don't trust that the majority of people are aware that they've got crap that they bring.
Yeah.
And I would like to just avoid that. And so for me, it was kind of a sense of power coming back to myself, but also you don't feel safe, so I don't want you in my space. It's this like rejection and coming into myself, because I feel like it's really sad when women and birthing people feel like they don't have a choice, like they have to, you know, they might like support, but it doesn't feel like safe support, and so they have to reject it completely. And that feels like a sad situation to be in.
I think you're right. As I'm listening to your story, my sort of my brain's going, having worked in the system for a long time, I know I've worked with so many different people, and the amount of people that would come into that situation with a really loving and enthusiastic, positive energy is like really minimal, you know, because the majority of people that work within the system work within that medical model. So one, there is, why would you not even call a midwife? And this is dangerous, and what might have happened, and we can't control it. That loss of managing and controlling, which is intention is for safety and well-being, but it comes across as being, you know, just managing, authoritarian. And when I think about, you know, the people that I've worked with, so I've had a couple of people come into my world in the past year where I've somebody who chose to have a completely free, unassisted pregnancy and birth. And I think she called the midwives afterwards because she said, we didn't have anything to cut the cord with. But, but it was like her fourth baby. And I'd met her a couple of times. I knew her well, you know, and she stayed out of the system. And then she was met with, and I think, you know, like I said to you before the podcast, I'm down in Cornwall, and I feel that, you know, there's, I don't know if it's the energy of Cornwall and the way that it is. And I think our maternity system services on the whole have improved over the past few years into a really good place. But I think I feel in my little world, there's less chance of being reported to social services for having a free birth, and more chance that the midwives are actually relieved if you're choosing to birth on your own, because otherwise they might not be able to listen in and do vaginal examinations. They either want to manage it completely or just step away, because we have no control, and because of the fear that something terrible is going to go wrong and I'm just going to be here picking up the pieces. That is the exact words that people use, you know, and it's almost like, like you said, you know, if having written to somebody at the beginning going, I'm in this space, I'm having a baby, by the way, and I'm okay, and this is my choice. Is that a good thing? These two people that I knew didn't, and everything was great. And it was, and the other person had their baby just before Christmas, and it was amazing. She would have been well sort of like high risk, you know, go to hospital. She'd had babies before as well, and she was taking that responsibility and ownership of her birth. And I was just really, God, I just feel so blessed to be invited into that space there with her. And then that thing that to not have somebody just come in and trample over it, you know, after I stayed for a few hours afterwards, and then I went home and I didn't see her for a couple of weeks. I think it might have been 2 or 3 weeks, and we sent a couple of little WhatsApp messages, but she was in her beautiful bubble with her baby, and she's done this before. She didn't want other people coming in, like you say, poking and prodding and ticking their boxes and bringing that energy. And that's the thing, the whole like that we know we have an energy about us that the NHS hasn't got a clue about. That for the majority of people, it is just we are a machine. I'm a machine made of parts, and I have a job to do. And I was reflecting on, you know, how sort of free birth has come into my world, and I think actually somebody who I cared for several times, she's now had 10 babies, and I was present. She chose to birth her second set of twins on her own with no, she didn't call, up until then she'd had engaged with the services, and then she birthed the twins on her own because she said, well, oh yes, no, that was it. She birthed the twins on her own, and she remembers the midwives coming in going, how dangerous you are, and you know, you should have called us, stopping up and down the stairs, and bringing this sort of real, obviously a really not a good vibe into the house after, bloody hell, she was amazing. And then I was her independent midwife for several of her babies, but I never went to the birth. Mm-hmm. I lived quite a long way from her, and she never chose to ring. She'd ring at the last minute. So I think her intention was always to just be birthing on her own, you know, mm-hmm. with her partner. I never really reflected on that before, but that's always what she does. Mm-hmm. And she always knew that if I turned up, I would just give her a hug and say, well done, and that's amazing, and this is awesome, and then tidy up. And I did that as a midwife. Do you know what I mean? You know, if somebody is comfortable with themselves, we don't need to go around poking them, checking perineums, doing all this stuff, you know, sitting in their space, writing our notes and having a chat. And I think this is the thing. It's no wonder people are choosing not to invite a midwife into their space, their birth space, because of what else they bring at the time. And it's sort of sad that in some ways that for some people they might want to have somebody, you know, who is, I write like on my, you know, a wise, loving presence there to be with them. And it seems to be that you can't have that. You're very unlikely to have that within the NHS service, you know. And so after all those experiences, which are, wow, I mean, that's a real, you know, a diversity of what you've seen, you know, and what you've experienced yourself. And now you run your workshop online course. What do you talk about? What is, and who comes to on your course?
So I get mostly people who are free birthing themselves, partners welcome, but I also get birth workers come. It's quite new. I've only been running it for about 6 months and it's kind of evolved. So it started off as I'm available with some information. Would you like to ask me any questions based on my experiences? And the more that it kind of went on, there were sorts of common questions that were coming up from the people that I spoke to. And actually I wrote it because this is the sort of information that I wish I'd had at the beginning. So that I talk about what is on offer, not as a package, but like, what is the deal? What can you expect in terms of appointments and tests and checks and everything that are going to be offered to you? If you choose to opt in, it's likely that all of these things will be triggered, like, you know, computer generated. So don't be surprised if you get this appointment around this kind of time, or, you know, how to navigate those things. Because I think for me personally, having things come unexpected is a real trigger for me. I don't like things just landing through my doorstep or having a knock on the door. I'd really like a bit of preparation. And I think bridging this gap in terms of communication, because the midwives know what they're about to offer, and they know their appointment schedule, but they don't often communicate it. And so just having that awareness before you go in, so that you know what it is that you might be opting out of, or that you might be expecting to receive. I also talk a lot about autonomy, consent, capacity, human rights in birth, and how you can navigate these services as safely as possible. And I don't for one second talk about it being a guarantee, because it's not, is it? Like, you unfortunately you can't guarantee who you're going to be met by, but I think having the language, you know, practicing different responses that you might give in appointments, because I really don't think it needs to be a battle. You can be assertive, not that it guarantees anything anyway, but you know, you can do your best in those difficult appointments perhaps, like. And I think just shifting language around articulating choice and how we decline things so that it's not inflammatory. I think there's a certain element to playing a game that we need to be doing, and you've got to protect yourself. As I don't want people to be going into appointments screaming and shouting at other human beings who are there doing their jobs, who might be feeling all sorts of stuff, because it's hard work at the minute. So I really, it's not about loading people up with weapons to go into a battle. It's about saying, look, this is what you can expect. You can select this, this, and this. This is how you might like to word it in a way that's not going to be inflammatory. Unfortunately, you might face this, this, or this. This is what might happen if you are referred to social services. So I've chatted with midwives, social workers, health visitors to contribute to the information that I include. I talk about what you could expect from the health visiting service and how you can opt out safely, because not everybody knows. Unless you've had a child, you don't know these sorts of, you get presented with the red book and you go, well, is this a legal document? Like, what is this? Yeah. So just information about that sort of, you know, I don't want to make any assumptions about what people know. And then who you might like to have in your space, the different kind of roles of professionals who might come and what their rough, crude kind of scope of practice might be, what you might expect in terms of medical support from this person or non-medical support from that person. And then if you are choosing to decline all of those things, say it's just you and your family, what do you need to do if you don't have you know, a registered midwife or you don't see a healthcare professional? So there's self-notification, for example. I talk people through that process, and the registration for a birth certificate. I know that not everybody chooses to register, so I touch on that a little bit. And I've also drafted up some correspondence email templates. So that's based on my own communications with people. And just as a starting point, really, for people to sort of find the words to say, this is my legal obligation, I'm fulfilling it, by the way, because lots of people in the offices might not know as well. Yeah. As a lot of difficult communications can happen. As well, things like vaccinations as well. I just produced information on what is going to be offered to you and your child, and how you might opt out of that safely. I mean, there seems to be a couple of camps with this sort of thing. Like, I see some people just say, look, just ignore it, don't engage, just go under the radar. And then there's other people who say proactively disengage might be safer. Personally, I'm in the latter. I feel that proactively disengaging is often a safer way, but it's, you know, I don't tell anybody how to do it. I just say, look, this is experience, this is what you could do, make your choice. And I say right at the very beginning, it isn't a course about science and evidence and research. It's not a course where I say, these are the reasons why you might want to accept this procedure or decline this one, or, you know, vaccinations, why you might want to accept whatever ones. I'm not here. It's just information about what's on offer. And I'm not about to tell you to follow the law. I just tell you what your legal obligations are. It's, you know, here's the information, do what you will with it.
Yeah.
And I've got in the Telegram app, I've got a support group. It's for peer-to-peer support, so it's like a community that's building. People can carry on discussions in that group. So recently we had a mum who just shared her free birth story, but also how she got on with the Child's Health Department locally to her, and how the notification went. So, you know, just keeping each other in the loop, because I think it can be really lonely when you're making these choices and everybody else around you is maybe not doing anything different to the norm. And so having these points of contact.
I know, just you know, talking to people down here, it's just making a decision to home birth with midwives is like, weird, why would you do that? And we've got quite a good home birth service, you know. So choosing to and that sounds really good. It's almost, you're building this community of people that are like-minded, and it sounds really kind and you know, and supportive. And like you said, I'm very much, I align with how you approach things as well, because, you know, obviously having worked in the system, most people I've come across are not out to get you. Yeah. But there are an awful lot of people that actually lack any understanding of what people's rights are, you know. And I think the way that the system works is that as a student midwife, you learn from your mentor, then you learn from your manager, and you follow the rules, and that's it. And most people do not look outside of that. So sometimes I think people will come across somebody who is choosing to free birth, and it's the first time ever, and they don't know. And people fear what they don't know. And like you said, within the system at the moment in the NHS, it's really hard, really short-staffed. So whenever you see somebody, they're just going to be ticking their boxes for 10 minutes because they've got, I don't know, a queue of a load of other people. You can actually do that kindly and well, you know, and respectfully. But sometimes I think people have, sometimes a lot of time they've got some sort of compassion fatigue where, you know, you're just a number because they've got to get through the day and get home and survive that day to pay their bills, and that's it, you know. But majority of people, there's no malice intended, you know, they're really not out to get you. I think occasionally there are a few people that are mean and possibly evil, but they are on the, you know, or they're bullies or whatever. You do come across people like that within the maternity system, but I like to think, you know, actually, like you say, be proactive, and you're, you know, enabling people to make very, you know, empowered choices, you know.
But I think as well, it's that balance of power, isn't it? And I think if we are entering an institution of any kind, there are ranks, there are levels, there are things that, you know, it's a beast in its own right, isn't it? And I think if we're going in with that mindset of, I am the bottom of the pile, that you naturally slot into that. It's, you know, the energy in the room will immediately be that different dynamic. Whereas if we can start going in going, well, look, I'm a soul, you're a soul, these human rights apply to both of us, you also have the right to not be discriminated against and all of this stuff, we are equal, you bring your expertise, I bring my expertise, and that is in me, in my body, in my life, and let's meet, you know. I think certainly there is space for a battle in some circumstances when I'm not saying that we should just tolerate abuse or tolerate awful things that happen, but I think going in with that sort of mindset of, I'm an equal to you, if not.
Yeah. I'm an expert in myself. Absolutely. Yeah. Absolutely. I've seen that in women who the people that I know who've chosen to have an unassisted pregnancy and free birth, they're like, yeah, but I know my body, I'm an expert in myself, and that's important. And I think, you know, it's part of, I always think birth and pregnancy is part of this bigger narrative that all of us feel, you know, sometimes we are controlled from the moment we're born. The system is this big thing that, you know, you're expected to go to school, to be a good girl, to behave, conform, and all the rest of it. And to actually come through into pregnancy and birth going, actually, I'm an individual, I can make my own choices, I'm an expert in my own body, that takes quite a lot, but it's such an opportunity, you know. And if not now, for you know, then when, you know, for that moment where you're birthing this other human, you know. Oh, I love what you just said there. I thought that could potentially be a very good note to end on. That I'm a soul, you're a soul, and let's meet. Love it. Well, is there anything else that you feel is important to share?
There is, and I'll try and keep it concise if we're in the mood of wrapping it up. But I just want to say that I'm not anybody special. I'm just a normal person. I'm special because everybody is, but also what I want to bring to the free birth kind of world and discussion is that free birth can be accessible for anybody. You don't need to fit into a type. You don't need to be a massive hippie. You don't need to be vegan, whatever it is that you might be thinking. And that's one of the reasons that we set up the podcast, just to hear a different side to the free birth story, which I think is really prominent, that you have to fit into a particular category. So yeah, I'm just really, really keen to continue, because other people are doing amazing work, of course, but to join that, saying that free birth can be accessible, to anybody who would choose it.
That's
and thank you so much for this conversation. It's been really, really lovely to speak with you finally.
I thought let's do this. So I've probably got about an hour on this one, and then I think we'll have to come back again, I'm sure. And to say, what's your Insta? Are you mainly on Instagram?
Yeah, I am. I'm not so active on Facebook, but Instagram is birthwise.withleonie. You can find me on
and there. That's where people can find you. Have you got a website or anything?
Not yet, no.
That's okay. Instagram's great. That's where I found you. So thanks very much. I hope, please, if anyone's got any comments that you want to, you can find us over on Instagram and send us a message, and any thoughts, and go and follow Leonie. That would be fab. Right. Goodbye.
Goodbye.
Oh no, I don't want to end the meeting. It's still recording. I'm going to stop recording now.